Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Welcome back to the Savvy Dentist Podcast, the show where great dentistry meets great business. It's Jesse Green here, as always, and today I'm pumped to be having a conversation with Dr. Luke Cronin. Luke, many people will know, runs an exclusive cosmetic practice in Sydney, and what we're going to be talking about today is some of the things he's learned about building a different style of dental practice, one that focuses exclusively on cosmetics, attracting high-end clientele to achieve a cosmetic outcome. There are some nuances and some differences between that kind of practice and a general practice. And today, Luke is going to talk about some of the things he's learned as he's built that practice, as well as some of the things that dentists might want to consider if they wanted to build that kind of practice as well. Things such as digital workflows, things such as having a highly skilled team, things such as having an optimized customer relationship for that particular clientele. It's a really wonderful interview because Luke shares very freely what he does, and he gives some practical information and some tips about how you can incorporate this style of practice into your own business as well. He does cover a lot of the things he's done well, as well as highlighting some of the lessons he's learned along the way. So as I said, you're going to learn a lot from it. So please do have a pen and paper handy because I know you're going to get a ton of stuff out of it. For those people who are new listeners to our podcast, welcome. It's great to have you here, and we'd love to continue the conversation with you at the Savvy Dentist Facebook group. It's a free Facebook group, and it's where we've got tools and training and tips and so on, and you can find it by heading across to drjessegreen.com/Facebook. There's a ton of stuff there, and we'd love to welcome you in there as well if you're a dentist. It's a dentist-only group, so if you're a dentist, please do head across. But for now, here's Luke Cronin, and as I said earlier, please have your pen and paper handy because there's a ton of stuff here for you. Luke Cronin, thank you so much for taking the time out of your day to come and hang with us on our podcast. How's things with you today, pal?
Very well, mate. Thank you very much for having me.
Mate, I've been hanging to have this conversation for a long, long time, and I know we've scheduled it for a while, and it's finally good to get down, sit down, and talk to you because you're running a pretty epic practice up there in Sydney, and it's really well known for the results, and of course, I want to talk about all that you do in that space. Mate, before we do kind of drill into the nuts and bolts of what you do and kind of look under the bonnet, I just wanted to start with a bit of background because your background is quite interesting. You spent a bit of time down in the national capital like me, mate. So how did you find your way to Sydney? What's the story?
Well, so it's been a bit of a journey, to be honest with you. Initially, when I graduated, I went to the Gold Coast for a while, then spent some time in London, and then I ended up in Canberra for a period of time, and then eventually went to the States, and I think it was in the States where it really started to get my creative ideas going to think that cosmetic dental practice is going to be the future. It took a few years following that before we actually executed the dream, essentially. But I figured Sydney would be the best opportunity for me to be able to bring that style of practice to market.
Yeah, well, you've certainly nailed it, mate. You've done really well. And your practice is regarded as the cosmetic practice in Sydney by many. And what I wanted to ask you is, what was it that led to that concept initially? Obviously, the time in the States and so on, but what was it that appealed to you about running a cosmetic practice compared to a more traditional general practice?
Well, the market's changing, and particularly in the high socio-demographic areas in Sydney, we're seeing a significant decline in dental disease, and we're starting to see more of an increase with sort of stress-related things such as wear. And then the appetite for cosmetics generally in Sydney has completely exploded. So basically it was an option of looking at which segment of the market that I wanted to take.
Yeah, so I really like that actually, Luke, because one of the things that you've been able to do really cleverly, in my mind at least, is to look at trends, look at opportunities, evaluate those opportunities, and then, of course, pursue it. So kudos to you, my friend. When you went into the process of building a cosmetic practice, because at that particular point, no one had really done it like you've done it, what were the things that you learned along the way? What were the speed bumps? Because I'm sure it wasn't all peaches and cream. There must have been a couple of little headaches along the way. What was, when you start off, you kind of go, I wish I'd known this at the outset?
I think one of the most important parts is being able to master interdisciplinary treatment. So being able to have control over the orthodontic components as well as the prosthodontic components really enables you to deliver the results that you need. And without being able to master both, I think it's very difficult to be able to increase the scope of the work that you do. So I'd say that the biggest speed bump was learning how to do clear aligner therapy well.
Okay. And so as you've gone about that particular process, and obviously you've got advanced pros skills anyway, you're obviously very good at that. Has that then enabled you to treat more people more extensively, or what's that meant for you in your practice particularly?
Well, I think it's important. If you've got a nail, use a hammer. If you've got a screw, use a screwdriver. So if you've got people that have got teeth in the wrong position, it's really important to be addressing that first. And then when you're using your prosthetics, you're using that to improve the aesthetic and change the shape of the teeth. And one of the big changes we've seen in that area has been the complete digitization of that process. So all of our orthodontic treatments are completely digital, and all of our veneer treatments are completely digital now.
So I guess when you think about digital workflow, again, it means different things to different people. Can you just give us a bit of an overview? Say I came to you as a patient, or maybe with a crossbite or something like that, and needed some diastomic closures or, you know, whatever it is, you know, just something random. What's the digital workflow involve in a treatment plan for you, and then of course the execution or implementation of that plan? What's practically what that means?
So using digital scanning technology, we start off with our beginning model, and then from there we use photography and we create the outcome right from the beginning. So everyone knows exactly where they're going. And because of the new techniques that we've mastered, essentially what we can do is we can have a completely digital workflow that's really repeatable and really predictable. And that's a really big asset, particularly for the clients, so they know exactly what they're doing before they start.
So consistency of outcome?
Consistency of outcome. So we can use a mock-up both as a visual and in real life for the patient, for them to be able to see what the outcome is before they start. And now that we can use the scanning technology and CAD-CAM technology, we can actually deliver that outcome exactly how we present it in the initial stages.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about that for a second, because I'm curious. There'll be people listening going, yeah, I get digital workflow, I understand scanning and CAD-CAM and so on, but how do I then join the two together? How do I get the scanning to the milling and all the rest of it, but how do I incorporate that into my practice on a practical level? How do I bring that to pass? So again, just stepping out of the clinical element just for a moment, which we'll dip back into, how did you introduce your team to it? What were the challenges in training the team? How did you get everything moving in such a way so that you didn't have to be the guy doing every little thing in that workflow?
I think it's very important to have good partners as well. So I've got a great partnership with Race Laboratories, and it's with their CAD and their CAM skills that really assists me. So my component of the process and my staff's component is what we're doing is we're creating that design. Once that design is created and we've shown the client, what we can then do is with the CAD milling technology, CAD and CAM, we can then deliver that with milled veneers with the same outcome that we had in our initial design.
Okay, and so in terms of your team internally within your practice, what is it that they do in that workflow versus what you do? Are you sitting there designing, or have you got your team designing, you overseeing? What's that look like in your practice?
So what we do is my staff will take all the records for me. I get the heavy lifting done on the design by the laboratory, which then means that my job is essentially to do the final touch-ups of that design. So it's really reduced the amount of personal exertion that I've had.
Yeah, because that's one of the things I've observed in the work that you do, Luke, is you run a really efficient practice. And on top of that, you've got time to do other things in your life as well. It's not like you're sitting there at 11 o'clock at night, sitting on your CEREC machine designing things. So I really like the fact you've been able to utilize a team approach to how you deliver that. And that's evident in the way you run your show. And it's great because not only is it freeing you up, it's also utilizing other people's expertise. What I wanted to talk about in just going back to building a cosmetically based practice, you've been able to integrate the technology and so on. How did you go about taking that to market? Was there a process that you needed to, go through, and were there traditional paradigms you needed to overcome to take that to the market? Was it well received from the get-go, or did you have to build awareness first?
Bring it to market took a long time, to be honest with you. I arrived essentially in Sydney just less than 6 years ago as an unknown. So there's a lot of publicity that needs to happen in order to bring your profile to a position where you actually get access to these clients. So the journey for me, I mean, the publicity piece is complex. I mean, there's traditional advertising that you need to use initially because it's paid for, and they will basically put your ads up in exchange for money. And then from there, you become more sophisticated in your approach. So you can use social media channels, and then you start to get more well-known, and from there you use PR. So editorial is the king. So once you're starting to get that editorial created around you, whether that's in magazines, online, or on television, that's when you really start to see the momentum.
Yeah, nice. And for someone who might be thinking about PR and editorial, is there any particular one or two key things there that need to be considered in that? Because editorial can go really well for you, but it can go south as well. So any little potholes that anyone needs to be aware of in terms of editorial?
I think it's important to have a good publicist, because they will help you pick the correct match, because you don't want editorial for editorial's sake. So you need some brand alignment. So it's really important that the editorial that you get is aligned with what your mission statements are. So once you've got that, then and good relationships, it's again down to partnerships. Once you've got good relationships, you're far less likely to get editorial that's unfavorable.
Nice. So you've done this for nearly 6 years now. You came to Sydney nearly 6 years ago. What does your practice look like today, and how is it different from when you started?
So the big changes that we've had in our practice compared to when we started is it's a lot larger. We've got a much better team approach than we did when we first started. Essentially, it was started with me doing all the work. So now that we've grown, it's enabled to bring in, you know, I've got another dentist who works for me who's doing a lot of the heavy lifting for me in terms of general dentistry and support. We also have some great and really talented staff that we've trained that do a lot of the work for me for the veneers and for the Invisalign as well.
Cool. Okay. So it sounds like there's been an element of leverage, an element of scalability in what you do. So I guess one of the questions, you know, there'll be a lot of people listening to this program, Luke, who go, you know, I love the idea of having cosmetics into my practice, even though they might be running a traditional general practice. My first question is, do you think for most people it's suitable to run the sort of practice that you run, which is pretty much exclusively geared the way you do, or do you think it's simpler and easier to have a cosmetic element to a general practice? What's your thinking around that for most people? I understand that you're at one end of the spectrum, but can anyone do what you do, or is it simpler to have cosmetics as a branch within a general practice?
I think being specialised, for want of using a different word, but concentrating on one element, you're always going to end up being better at it. In saying that, if you're going to incorporate cosmetics into a general practice, I think some of the pitfalls of doing that is that you really need, it's a different customer service experience that cosmetic clients expect. So you need to be very mindful that if you are having general clients that are going to be in the surgery at the same time, that maybe you look at structuring the diary in such a way that there's not so much crossover, because people find that people who are going to spend a lot of money next to somebody who, for example, might be complaining about spending very little money doesn't work very well as a synergy. And I think if you are going to bring cosmetics within a general practice, that you just need to separate that a little bit.
Again, I really think that's a strong, strong point. So for anyone listening here who wants to introduce cosmetics into a general practice, I would strongly suggest you go back and just have a listen to what Luke's speaking about right there. Luke, so moving on from your particular practice as it stands now, you've also developed a reputation as someone who teaches around, you know, cosmetic work and rehabs and veneers and so on. And I've seen some of your teaching and it's first class, and everything you do is really polished and practical and useful. What was the impetus to getting into that role? What prompted that?
I mean, it's a little bit of giving back as well. I enjoy teaching, and I think we've spent a lot of time in the chasm, so to speak, where we're pushing hard to develop these digital workflows, and we're now at a position where they're really predictable. And I think it's important to be able to take that to market and being able to show other dentists how that digital workflow works.
Okay, so it's not a masochistic streak. No, that's cool. I'm only joking, of course. So now that you've been teaching this, obviously my experience teaching things is that every time I teach something, I learn it a bit better myself. And equally, I realize some of the things I've assumed along the way or I've just kind of taken for granted that I might know that may or may not be common knowledge. What sort of things have you inherently figured out throughout the process of teaching that you kind of go, wow, this is a common mistake that I see people make as they go through their cosmetic work and doing their clinical work in that space? What are the common missteps or mishaps that people might make?
I think some of the big pitfalls is not having enough confidence to start with. And I think that lack of confidence is linked to a lack of education potentially as well. So what you need to be confident that you can deliver the outcome. And once you can be confident that you can deliver the outcome, then the steps essentially fall behind that. A lot of people, I think, they're trying to achieve an outcome from a situation that outcome is unlikely to be achieved from, for example, extremely misshapen or crooked teeth, and looking to try and correct that with a veneer treatment only, or selecting the most difficult case to start out with.
Okay, so coming back to that, then it is A, confidence, B, case selection, and C, having the knowledge and skills to be able to do that. So starting with the first one, how does one go about getting confident? Is it simply just getting more knowledge, trying more things? Is it around mentoring? Is it around having someone to look over their shoulder? What does that look like for the newbie who wants to get started in terms of mastering their anterior aesthetic work?
I think the confidence you get is as a result of the digital workflow. So if you can confidently, before you start, have an endpoint, then achieving that endpoint is a lot simpler than if you don't know where you're heading. So I think that you will intrinsically get more confidence as a result of being able to have the outcome dictated before you start.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. That certainty of output, that certainty of the final product, and knowing that workflow is tight, it's tried, it's tested, it works, I think that's going to be key. All right, so that's how we build confidence. Moving on beyond confidence, how do we build competence? Obviously, training. Is it, again, just starting with a couple of simple cases and then moving forward? Is that the general process you'd suggest?
Well, I think education aside, following you've got adequate education, from there, a lot of it is just practice, to be honest. It's like anything else we do in life. The more we do it, the better we become. You're not going to step out with your first veneer case and be as good as your 100th veneer case. That's just the way things work. But that's why you need that first element of confidence, so that you can go on that journey and learn from your mistakes to deliver the outcomes that you want.
Yeah. And I think something you spoke about as well is, yeah, your first one might not be as good as your 100th one, or won't be. But it's that old saying is, when was the best time to plant an oak tree? 20 years ago. When's the second best time? Today.
That's right. So every journey has a beginning. If you don't start, you're not going to be on the journey. So you need to, if you're planning on doing it, you need to start.
Yeah, exactly. And then that comes back to the process of educating yourself, having the workflow in place, making sure you're putting yourself in a situation where you've got the optimal chance of success. You've got some, as I said, some good learning, some good workflow, and some people to work with on your team to support you. So, mate, as you've gone through this journey, and we've spoken about teaching people, we've spoken about some of the mistakes people make around getting started, what other things do you kind of wish? You can see people go, they come to a course, they go back to their practice, I'm sure they reach out to you for support. If there was someone listening to this podcast and you wish you could just tap them on the shoulder and say, hey, don't do that, just do this, what's the common thing that you wish people would know?
The most complicated part about cosmetics is not the dentistry. It's the client that you're treating. So having a client with a expectation of an outcome that's either A, not what that outcome is possible to be, or B, it's fictitious because of their sort of aspirations as opposed to their reality, then I think what you the big struggling point you get as the dentist is you get too far in and you realize that you can't, no matter what you do, make this person happy, because at the end of the day, we make teeth, not happiness. So there is not selecting a client who you get along well with, and I won't see every client, to be honest. We need to have a relationship together because it is a journey that I'm going to go on with them. And if I'm not confident that I've got a relationship of mutual respect, then I won't start the case. And I think a lot of the time, potentially the dollars get in the way of good case selection in terms of personalities as much as anything else, as opposed to difficulties in the actual treatment outcome. That would be my biggest piece of advice to people starting.
Okay, so let me ask you a question. In terms of managing the patient, their expectations, yes, it comes back to that selection process up front. But what sort of communication, apart from the digital workflow and the photos and the outcomes that you've mapped, what other communication pieces are you having throughout that patient journey with your patients?
So we've got initial point of contact. That will be either via a website inquiry or via a phone call. If it's via a website inquiry, that's then followed up in the same format by my staff, so via email. We're then starting to build that rapport with the patient. So at that stage, you start to get a bit more information from them as to what type of person they might be, what their expectations are going to be. And I think as a result of that, you start to sort of build a dossier of who this client is. Following that, then you have the initial meeting with me. And during that meeting with me, I'm talking about what they want, why they want it, how they're going to get the outcome, what do they foresee as the outcome that they're going to be happy with. But I'd never use the word be happy with, because I don't want to be suggesting that we're going to be selling happiness. So it's all part and parcel of creating that relationship with the patient, and that's long before anything clinical has ever happened.
Yeah. So what I'm hearing is that throughout the whole journey, communication is critical, from the very beginning all the way through to the very end, to delivery even, and even perhaps post-delivery. So I guess what I wanted to ask you in all of that is, how have you had to learn, or what have you had to learn particularly compared to when you were doing a more general dentistry style to more cosmetic dentistry? What sort of communication skills have you had to learn to be able to manage that process effectively from a communication point of view?
So unlike a lot of general treatments, which for the most part are relatively short appointments, once you start to be doing more comprehensive work, aside from the extra expectation associated with the cost of the treatment, but what you're then getting is that it's the client journey is an interesting one. So with veneers, for example, when you show them the mock-up for the first time, the design, that's very exciting for them. When you prepare the teeth, that's not as exciting for them. When you finally fit them, and this is, I think, one of the things that people are not aware of, when you fit them, that part's not particularly exciting either, because they're numb, they don't feel very nice about themselves, they don't look like what they did in the mock-up because their lip's not moving. And then they start to get, and this is the part that's really difficult, really important to manage well, at this point they can start to get a little bit of remorse for the treatment. So managing that part is the most difficult. And the way that I manage that part is I prep them prior to that appointment to let them know emotionally what they're going to feel like. And I find that in a lot of cases they do feel like that, and it's not as much of a shock for them that they do feel like that. So when they come back for the review, which I do 3 weeks later, all those emotions have subsided. So prepping the client prior to that means that when you get to that point, which they think and common sense would prevail that you think that would be the most exciting part, where in fact it's not, being able to incorporate that psychology prior really makes the management of the clients a lot better.
I think that is absolute gold about pre-framing that expectation ahead of time. And I think there's that, I can't remember who said it, so I'm going to misquote someone, some poor bugger, I'm going to probably butcher their quote. But anyway, whoever said it was essentially, if you haven't had that conversation up front, it feels like you're forever retreating when that emotional response does occur. But if you've anticipated it ahead of time, then you're a prophet, basically. So you either get to be a prophet and say you will probably experience this range of emotions, and then they do, or they experience that range of emotions anyway, and you feel like you're retreating because you haven't taken the opportunity to pre-frame it. So I think, again, anyone listening to this particular podcast, please go and have a listen to what Luke just shared, because it's absolute gold. And I think, to be honest with you, I think that applies clearly in this kind of cosmetic case, but I think it applies in a lot of general cases as well. Even if you're putting on a couple of crowns or an implant or whatever it happens to be, I think there's managing the patient expectations and throughout that journey is key. So, Luke, you've now gone through and developed these communication skills, and they're obviously finely honed and very effective at what you do. What about the whole presentation of the case itself? Just to go back into that journey a little bit earlier stage, you present your mock-up and so on and so forth. Is it a case of finding cosmetic cases easier to present, harder to present, the same to present as you found when you're running a general practice? What's been your experience in the presentation part?
So it's different to general dentistry. So people are seeking you out specifically for treatment, and the treatment is elective. So it's a completely different approach altogether. So they're already coming to the presentation wanting the treatment. Whereas if, for example, someone needs to have wisdom teeth out, they're not going to want to have it done regardless. So they're going to be, they need, the way that you would nurture that client is completely different to the way that you would nurture a client who's got the desire to have it done. Their biggest apprehensions are, is it going to look like what I hope it looked like? And then the other one is, can I afford this?
So being prepared to overcome those two particular objections is going to be key, and I guess you deal with that as bread and butter all day, every day. So, again, the mock-up will be very useful guide, and will it look like this? I mean, this is the end result. You can visually show someone what it's going to look like with your photographs and so on. And then, of course, the price objection, again, people will generally come to a cosmetic practice such as yours expecting a certain fee structure, I would imagine. I don't imagine you'd get too many people who are going to struggle too much. I mean, I'm sure there's a stretch for some, but I'm sure that your clientele is typically more affluent. Is that fair enough or not?
It is, but there's a lot of aspirational people. So we do find, because of the Instagram presence, we do get a lot of people, and Instagram does drive that narcissism of today's society. But as a result of those people that are coming in with massive expectations that want outcomes, and a lot of them can't afford it. And with the new development of all these pay later schemes, but everybody assumes that they can afford things that they can't. So there still is that barrier where people go, oh, yes, there's a payment plan through X provider. As a result of that, they think that therefore that with their job that they earn $15 an hour or whatever the minimum wage is these days, that they can have a $30,000 treatment. And that's just not the case. So managing that is also difficult from a financial point of view.
Yeah, okay. So, Luke, one of the things that you've built is this practice around cosmetics, and there'll be a certain proportion of people who kind of think, in spite of everything we've covered, they might be asking themselves, can I do this? Should I do this? Blah, blah, blah. And I guess what I wanted to ask you about was, firstly, the should I do this part. Is this type of practice the sort of practice for everyone, or is it something that's not going to suit everyone? And then I wanted to ask you a bit more about the next step. So could I just ask you to speak to the person listening to this podcast who might be thinking, I'd like to do something similar to Luke. Should I do this?
So I don't think it's for everybody, but in saying that, I think it is a growing market at the same time. I think to succeed in cosmetics, you need to have really good communication skills. You need to know the processes inside out and back to front, and also be able to have that repeatable and predictable outcome. And now that we can do that, I think that is the greatest change. And that's a lot of the reasons why people struggled before, because they would do a mock-up, for example, and then they'd have their veneers and it wouldn't look anything like it because it was done by hand. And I think that, along with good partnerships with your laboratory side, enables you to deliver those outcomes. So they're the two key things for me: communication and predictable outcomes.
Cool. Okay, so the next part of the question is, all right, I need to know how to develop my skill set in this area. I'm the sort of person listening to this podcast. This sounds like something I'd really like to do. I'd like to run a sort of practice that's a bit more, not a bit more, but is cosmetically focused. You train in this area. How can people take the next step in learning how to do this? What's the next logical thing to do?
Matt Race and I run a course called Master Aesthetic Veneer Symposium. And what we tried to achieve there was really simplify the process. So I think a lot of courses go into very difficult, complicated technical learning, whereas this course is designed more practically. So we go through from the beginning, we go through consultation techniques. We talk about the complete digital workflow. We do speak about preparation and cementation as well. But then we also talk about the marketing component. So we talk about social media and advertising and editorial. We also then talk about how to train your team, because there's a big team approach when it comes to cosmetics, because you need to have that A-grade customer service right from the start with a cosmetic client, or you'll end up losing them. So what we, the tagline for our course is remove your fears from veneers. And I think that kind of surmises what we're teaching people, because if you're scared, it's going to be more difficult. It's that building confidence that I said right at the beginning of the podcast. That's what we're trying to achieve through this course. And it runs for 2 days.
Cool. Okay. So if I wanted to find out where that is, that's at masterdentalevents.com. They can find out more information there.
That's right. We haven't got the dates up for next year, but a bit of a preview of what we're going to be doing. We've got dates in the first quarter in Melbourne and Auckland. In the second quarter next year, we'll be in Canada for anybody listening from North America. We're then going to come back to Sydney in the third quarter, and we'll be back in Singapore as well at the end of the third quarter.
Fantastic. So for anyone listening, I've been along to that event. It's a terrific event. I'd really commend it to you. I know Luke and Matt put on a terrific show, and it's just loaded with practicality. It's a very useful, practical, hands-on, step-by-step course. So for anyone who is at all interested in upping their game in that space, I recommend it highly. Luke, you've been an absolute trooper in pulling back the curtain on the difference between a cosmetic practice and a general practice, as well as showing some practical steps to, you know, really enhance your skills in cosmetics, to build a practice around that. Mate, if there was one or two things, if we had the, I can even say this is a gospel according to Luke, because there is such a thing, but we're going to call it the gospel according to Luke Cronin this time. And say I was driving down the highway from Sydney to Canberra, and there's a billboard, and it had the gospel according to Luke Cronin. What would that billboard say?
What you need to do is be confident in what you do. And by being confident in what you do, you'll end up becoming competent in what you do. Make sure you've got the right education. Hone your communication skills. And then basically the Lord's your oyster.
Mate, that is fantastic advice. And again, I want to say thank you to you for hanging out with us today, mate, taking the time out of your day. I know you've got a jam-packed schedule because your practice is going gangbusters. So well done to you, mate, on your tremendous success. And once again, I'm very appreciative of the time you've taken out of your day to come and hang with us. Thank you, mate.
Thanks very much, Jesse.
Cheers.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist podcast with Dr. Jesse Green. For more free tools and resources, join the free Facebook group. Visit drjessegreen.com/Facebook. And for more episodes, visit drjessegreen.com/savvydentist.